Hello and welcome again to the extended version of the CrossLink Radio special on OT science, orofacial myofunctional therapy science. And we are doing this expanded interview with Diane Barr, who is a certified speech language pathologist and infant massage instructor. She has practiced speech language pathology since 1980 and has been a feeding therapist since 1983. Her experiences include teaching graduate, undergraduate, and continuing education courses, working with children and adults who exhibit a variety of speech, language, feeding, and swallowing disorders. She's also publishing and presenting information on oral sensory motor function assessment and treatment. She's the author of the textbook Oral Motor Assessment and Treatment: Ages and Stages. She has also written a book for parents and professionals entitled Nobody Ever Told Me or My Mother That: Everything from Bottles and Breathing to Healthy Speech Development. Let's welcome Diane Barr. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you, Shirley?
I am awesome. I am just so in love with these topics for orofacial myofunctional therapy and speech language and all of this stuff. It's just so exhilarating. I just don't even know how to settle down some days.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. All right, so let's get started. We are going to talk a little bit about breastfeeding and food choices and how children kind of evolve into food choices and what are good food choices for our children.
Great.
So, breastfeeding does more than just give a thirsty kid something to drink.
Right.
It isn't just about the milk. It's about the entire process of breastfeeding. So can you talk a little bit about how breastfeeding helps prepare the mouth for food and liquid introduction?
Yes, the breastfeeding is really the biologically normal way to feed babies. I mean, any other mammal would feed a baby through breastfeeding, not a bottle. The only time bottles are used with other mammals is when the mother isn't available, like in zoos and things like that. So bottle feeding is a medicalized way of feeding children, and it doesn't support mouth development and oral structure in the same way as breastfeeding. So the things that breastfeeding does to help prepare the mouth so that then we're ready for eating and drinking other things at 6 months of age is this. The breast is drawn deeply into the mouth, and this helps to maintain the hard palate shape. So if you're a parent and you don't know that term, we're talking about the roof of the mouth. Now, the roof of the mouth needs to stay fairly broad because it's also the floor of the nasal area. And that's our airway where we're breathing. So we need the nasal area to stay nice and open so the child can breathe well during feeding. The other thing breastfeeding does is it balances the pressures that are in the nasal area, the middle ear, and parents, if you're listening, you know how much middle ear infections can impact speech development and also just be very unhealthy for your child. Other balance pressures are in the throat area and in the what we call the larynx or the voice area. And all this is happening during breastfeeding, a very nice balance of pressures. Breastfeeding supports what we call the suck, swallow, breathe sequence. And so bottle feeding, you use suck, swallow, breathe, but it's not quite the same. In fact, bottle feeding is a very different process than breastfeeding in terms of that synchronization. When the mom alternates breasts for breastfeeding, it exercises both sides of the face, the head, and the body. And we know through research that children who breastfeed have better face, jaw, palate, tooth, and speech development. They have fewer upper and lower respiratory problems. And they have fewer digestive problems such as gastroesophageal reflux, belly pain, and bowel problems. So breastfeeding helps the whole system prepare for feeding that's going to start about 6 months of age.
So, I don't even know where I want to go now because it's so complex and simple at the same time. All you got to do is, not every mother can breastfeed, and I don't want to imply that we're elitists about it. But I'm a firm believer in breastfeeding and everything, but sometimes you just can't. But let's just stick with the normal part of how all of this operates. So now the child's palate has been expanded. The child has learned how to suck and swallow and breathe. And now the kid is 6 months old and they're jamming everything in their mouth. They're tasting their toes, they're tasting the dirt, they're tasting, little fuzz balls that you never saw were there, but they've got them. How
Right.
that does that is that a no-no? Should we be slapping their hands or
Yeah.
what should we do?
Well, let me just go to your question about bottles. You'll notice that the title of my book is Everything from Bottles and Breathing to Healthy Speech Development. And what I do tell parents in that book is how to appropriately bottle feed. Because of the society we live in, we want to help keep the palate spread and get the best development in children who bottle feed. So I have information in the book about how to keep that structure in shape if you're bottle feeding. So I'm not, again, being elitist, I'm glad I like that word. While we really want to encourage everyone to breastfeed who possibly can, if you need to bottle feed, everything I do, whenever I do an interview, whenever I teach, it's a no-guilt process. So please do not feel guilty if you can't breastfeed. Having said that, back to the fuzzies in the mouth and the mouthing of everything. Mouthing is a developmental process. And children do something called generalized mouthing starting in utero. You'll look at sonograms in utero, and babies will have their fists in their mouths, they'll have their feet in their mouths, they'll have their fingers in their mouths. This generalized mouthing is where everything is happening at the front of the mouth. There's a lot of sucking going on during this process. And that mouthing goes on to about 4 or 5 months of age. Around 4 or 5 months, we start to see another process coming into place called discriminative mouthing. And a lot of parents don't know about this because they've never heard about this development. Generalized mouthing to discriminative mouthing. And so when people use pacifiers, for example, children are only getting sucking, but they're not able to get the kind of mouthing they would get with their fingers, their hands, and discriminative mouthing. Now the baby at 4 or 5 months of age is moving the finger throughout the entire mouth. It's a time when we have some really nice appropriate mouth toys I'm going to recommend
Oh, great.
that are available made in the U.S. From FDA-approved materials. And they're small enough that children can get the little parts of them throughout the mouth and yet not swallow pieces from them. And you can hand these toys to the child so they can mouth them. And what we want them doing is biting, 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 getting the little like one's a triangle, getting a part of the triangle all the way back to the back molar area. If you hand a child a spoon as they're starting to eat, you'll see them move that spoon all throughout the mouth. That discrimination within the mouth is what's needed for good placement and collection of food, handling different food textures, as well as speech later on. And the toys that I like, and you can contact me. You'll have my website, you'll have my email. You can contact me directly if anybody listening forgets. But the toys I like, a couple of toys are made by Arc Therapeutics. One's called the Baby Grabber. And the other ones that I love are called the Beckman Tri-Chews. They're little triangles that the child can hold on with two hands and then mouth another part of it. So you're getting the discriminative mouthing. And then Mary Schiavone of Chewy Tubes has just come out with a whole line of baby mouth toys. So Now we're not stuck with those really huge mouth toys that you often see in the store that you don't know where they're made and you don't know what they're made from.
So would you so those other toys, are they commonly called teething rings or teethers?
Yeah, well, they are teething toys for sure, and teething is very important. A lot of times when you go down the baby aisle at the store, you see a lot of pacifiers. That's good for calming, and we're not going to talk about pacifiers today. That's a whole nother topic. But there are pacifier guidelines also in my book. But they are teething toys, and there are some things you can get on the market, like the Lively Links, some of the Baby Einstein products. You just have to look for toys that the baby can get around throughout the mouth safely without swallowing any pieces of it. Like the fuzzies, they're likely to swallow.
It can get kind of touchy there. We had five children, I think I mentioned to you once before, and there was a lot of tasting, let's just say. And, you know, you just chase around and you just try to make sure that they're not tasting things that are going to be harmful. And it's part of their cognitive development as well as just learning how to move their mouth. So
right, and
it's important.
Learning, the mouth is, go ahead, finish.
No.
The mouth is like a third hand.
Yeah.
And during this process. So everybody knows about the keys. The kids are always going for the keys. That's why they made the baby mouth toy the keys. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep going.
No, I was just reminiscing on how hard it is to keep your kids from putting stuff in their mouth and how careful you have to be. And you have to really kind of wash your keys in the dishwasher because no matter where you put them, they're going to find them and taste them no matter what. So.
Right. And the mouth tools I'm recommending can be put in the top rack of the dishwasher
and
cleaned.
All right. So we talked a little bit about the utensils and stuff. And then that kind of brings me to beginning foods, because that is a little bit controversial right now. Foods that when my brother was born, he's a little bit younger, you know, 10 years younger than me, it was about rice cereal. And everybody had rice cereal. And I was like, I'm not giving my kid rice cereal. I'm going to give my kids fruit and vegetables, you know, mashed up to start. And mostly it was fruit because obviously it would go down and applesauce was already ground up. But mostly, you know, in the 70s and 80s, we were grinding our own food. And now
Absolutely.
I see we have these freaking pouches where kids just suck the food out. I just want to just run around the aisle and just say, stop the madness.
Well, let me tell you about the research.
Oh, good.
The information I'm going to give you today is from the only longitudinal study that we know of that's been done by Suzanne Evans Morris, who is my mentor. And it was originally done in 1978, so back when you and I were grinding foods for our babies and making our own baby food. And she revised it in 2003. And she has a book called Pre-Feeding Skills, a Comprehensive Resource for Mealtime Development with Marcia Dunn Klein. And we use that heavily in the feeding world, so with children who are having difficulty. But everything I'm going to tell you now is based on her longitudinal study. And we're hoping to do another longitudinal study to update things.
Great.
But her work does hold true as far as we as feeding therapists can see. And I feed typically developing babies as well as children who have problems. So around 6 months of age, both the World Health Organization and the American Academy of Pediatrics agree that's when we move from breastfeeding, or if you're bottle feeding exclusively, to our foods. And it's at that time, around 6 months, you can introduce so much. You know, back in the 70s, we were starting around 3 months of age to introduce the rice cereal, like you talked about. And the baby's mouth just wasn't ready for it. They hadn't gone through this discriminative mouthing process. Now, by 6 months, they've been doing the discriminative mouthing for a couple of months, hopefully, if they have the items to mouth. And we can start with spoon feeding. That's what parents often like to start with because that's what people do. And there's a couple of spoon feeding methods that I talk about in my book. We can introduce children to open cups. I talk about exactly how to do that in the book. We can even teach them to drink from straws at this time, and they can have soft baby cookies. So we just, you know, need to know how to do it. And by going down the baby food aisle and seeing all the pouch foods and everything, I was thrilled. I was out at a restaurant, and a mom was squeezing the pouch onto a spoon and feeding her baby from the spoon. And I was thrilled because the pouch foods are problematic in that they are just encouraging sucking, 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 and we're not getting the food manipulated around the mouth in the way that will help the mouth develop. So do you want to hear about like the 6 to 12 month level, what we introduce there when we look at food? Okay, so the 6 to 12 month level. So parents and therapists and whoever else is working with babies out there, get yourself a food mill, you know, a blender, whatever. You don't have to start with purees, but you can use purees with babies. But 6 to 8 months, we want milled, blended, well-mashed foods. So a fork will do. Mm-hmm. If you have a soft food, you can mash. We want wheat-free soft cookies and crackers. So the arrowroot cookies are good ones to mm-hmm. start with. And you're not going to hand the cookie to your six-month-old for the first time. You're going to sit with them and hold the cookie with them. The same with your mouth toys. If you start mouth toy work 3 or 4 months of age, that's when I started. We sit there and we hold the mouth toy with the baby. Mm. 6 to 8 months, you can also introduce cooked sticky rice. And this is all from Suzanne's longitudinal study with babies.
Okay.
And then as far as liquids, sips of water, and here's where we can introduce our little sips from an open cup. And I'm not big on sippy cups at all. We can talk about that just a bit, but again, that's a whole different topic. But diluted fruit juice, if you're going to use fruit juice diluted with water, breast milk formula, can be given in an open cup. You can start to teach straw drinking at this time, as I said, and I give you all the specifics in the book. And so that's 6 to 8 months. Then 7 to 10 months, and see, here's the problem. Parents go to the baby food aisle, and the pediatrician is your general doctor, and I'm not speaking against pediatricians, but they're your general doctor, and parents often come in mad at their doctor because they say, well, the doctor didn't tell me, and when I look at the baby food jars, they didn't tell me that I can give these textures, and now I have a child who will only accept purees. And that's part of the problem. The textures aren't being introduced early enough. So you go to your doctor, they'll give you some general guidelines, but you need to go to somebody like us who has the developmental data to give you the details. So 7 to 10 months, we're now looking at chopped, cooked fruits and vegetables. So Shirley, you did a lot with fruits.
Yep.
We're mashing our foods.
Mm-hmm.
Where soft cheese is introduced. And here's where your wheat and corn products are introduced. And you don't introduce foods all at once.
Mm-hmm.
One thing people seem to know these days is that you introduce a food, you see if the child has any reaction to it over 3 or 4 days, no reaction, you can keep on going with the food because we're very sensitive to allergies and sensitivities these days. And the same thing, you're using your open cup, you're using your straw cup, and straw is taught a very specific way, placed just on the lips. We're not going to use sucking like from a bottle with a straw placed on the tongue. And so we're using our water, our diluted fruit juice, our breast milk, our formula, 7 to 10 months. And then 9 to 12 months, we're progressing even further with the food. We're now presenting soft, and the key word here is soft, cut up, cooked, and raw foods. Soft, chopped meat. So your stewed chicken is just fine here.
Mm-hmm.
Casseroles, bread, toast, and crackers. Egg yolk is introduced at 9 months. Egg white is introduced around a year. Cottage cheese, baby yogurt. And then again, the same water, diluted juice, using our open cup, our straw cup, or one cup I didn't mention, a recessed lid cup, where the lid is recessed into the cup so the baby can drink from it like an open cup. So that's up to 12 months.
You know, I'm trying to remember. I don't think we used sippy cups at all. I don't think they were really big back then. But our kids were drinking out of a cup at a year old. I remember people commenting on that, and I thought, well, I gave them a chance, and we just taught them how, and then it was, that's what it is. It's a plastic cup. It's, I'm not going to give them glass unless we're really monitoring, but they could drink out of a cup, and they could put on their own winter jacket at 2 years old, and people were just astonished. And I thought, you just teach them how to do it. They can tell time at 4 years old. You don't have to baby the babies,
And that's part of the problem is that we're keeping them kind of helpless in a way by not introducing things on time. And then we have kids in therapy who need treatment because they haven't had this introduction. And parents, if you're listening, this is a no guilt kind of thing because you don't
You
know
don't
what
know.
you don't know.
I
And we know Joy Waller is the person that tells us that all the time. She's a very important orofacial myofunctional therapist that teaches a lot.
She does teach a lot, and she teaches us that everybody's a snowflake, and I've been, a real advocate for professional responsibility, in teaching and not making judgment. Heart surgeons are the worst people for oral hygiene. They're horrible. But oh my God, are they good at heart surgery? I don't want to do heart surgery. So everybody has a talent, and you don't know what you don't know until you know it, and then you just do the best you can with what you need to be doing. So,
Well, also, back in the time when we were raising our kids in the 70s and the 80s, we didn't have a lot of sippy cups.
no.
We had a Tommy Tippy cup, and the whole idea of that was if you use the spout, you used it for a very short period of time, and you got them on the recessed lid cup and the open cup pretty quickly.
Right.
So we didn't have a whole, and I think one reason the sippy cup became so popular is because parents are now on the move a whole lot more, and so it's a non-spill option. But you can have a child properly drinking from a straw, and that means just the straw placed on the lip, not on the tongue, and use a non-spill straw cup and have that go around with you if you need something to take with you instead of the sippy cup.
And do kids really need that much liquid?
They do. Kids need more liquid than adults. Adults need half of their body weight in ounces of water per day. Children need two-thirds of their body weight in ounces per day. So one of my little boys that I treat is 50 pounds, and he needs 33 ounces of water per day. So because the hydration helps the brain to function and just makes people feel better, it helps them avoid things like depression.
And
So
improve
yes,
cognition.
I would take the hydration with me.
All right, well, that's good. So that's an important thing to really understand. I don't remember my mother ever having anything to drink in the car, no matter where we went, unless it was a couple hours. And so this whole liquid thing is kind of still foreign to me, and it's hard to get all that fluid in a day.
And it's water, and it's mostly water that they need. So I say diluted fruit juice because that's what's in the research literature. But kids really don't need the juice. And sippy cups from a dental hygiene perspective are not good because that lets sugar lie around the mouth, especially if you are. And so you get more cavities if you're using sippy cups. And so dentists really don't like them. And there's a lot of articles about that. And so, but the hydration, I say, get your kid used to water. All my children in treatment are drinking water, and they have their straw cups with them, and they don't have to have them in the car if it's only a short drive. But if you are going out and you're going to all these different activities, have your hydration with you.
Excellent. Can we talk about meat for a minute? And there was a lot of controversy about hot dogs. Not that I would want to call it meat today, but cutting it, not cutting it, let the kid eat it, because it is a neat finger food. for children, especially when they have those four little front teeth, and it's just so fun to watch them bite things. I'll never forget our kids biting raisins in half. I just thought that was the cutest thing.
Well, and that's what you have to do. You have to watch your kids do it. So with grapes and with hot dogs, the controversy is the circular shape. So hot dogs are perfectly fine if they're healthy hot dogs. And then you're just not going to give them the circle. You're going to cut it one more time so that it looks a little like a half moon. Same with your grapes. You're going to cut them in half. And you're going to be with your child when they eat. We want people eating together. We want children observing other people eat. We don't want children feeding in isolation. Children have these things called mirror neurons in their brain, and they do what they see. And so we have such a fast food kind of culture, and people aren't necessarily eating together. So just cut your Vienna sausages are a thing. They have baby Vienna sausages are things that are often given babies. So just watch your kid while they're eating. Don't give them the round that they can, kind of aspirate on, and go with that.
Excellent. Yeah, I didn't realize it was the round shape. I just knew they were the pieces would get, then they would choke on that. But if you cut a long hot dog the long way, right, that should be better. Awesome.
Oh, and that's perfect. Cut it all the way to one. Yeah, that's perfect. Plus, encourage them to take bites with those little teeth in the front. A lot of parents will say to me, well, I don't want to give them anything to chew because they don't have teeth. Well, how are they ever going to get teeth if they don't chew? It's chewing and jaw work that brings about the teeth coming in.
And it starts digestion. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
it's really funny how we're moving away from chewing in our whole society here in the United States.
Oh,
Juicing
right.
and I don't know, I could go on and on about that too. So where can
Chewing and
people
digestion.
we just have
Go
a
ahead.
couple of more minutes, and I just want to make sure that everybody
Okay.
knows where your website is, and it's
Okay.
agesandstages.net.
Right. Now we have 12 to 24 months that we didn't cover, but I have that covered in another interview. If parents look on my website, they'll see another interview for 12 to 24 months. Let me just say, 12 to 24 months is when children refine their eating and drinking skills. And that is a time, by 24 months, your child should be eating and drinking things just like you and me. I'm not talking about alcoholic beverages here.
Oh,
I'm
come
talking about, you know what I'm saying? Excuse me.
And no
I'm saying that
Coca-Cola
they should
either,
be,
right? I just, oh, it's a
right.
crack up for us when
I
you
have a slide about that too. No Mountain Dew, no Coca-Cola. But in terms of food management, they should be eating by 24 months with their mouth closed. If they can, they don't always. They should be biting through any texture. They have mature biting and chewing and tongue movement patterns. They actively use their lips. They can hold an open cup without spilling. So that just quickly finishes development. And then as far as where to find my information, our website is www.agesandstages.net. So you spell out agesandstages.net. And my email is agesandstages@cox.net. Or you can just email me at mine. Personal email, which is dibahr@cox.net, dibahr@cox.net. We have on our site blogs, Q&As. We put up new ones every month. Shirley, I hope you'll do one for us at some point. We
Happy
have our
to.
upcoming courses. I answer clinical questions. We have a network that everybody can join and network with one another so that they can find you in your state, your clinic. So if you're a therapist or a clinician who's listening or a dentist, put yourself on the networking list so people can find you and know what you do. On there, you'll find a full description of my book that we discussed. I have an e-course about babies. It's called Everything You Need to Know About a Baby's Mouth for Good Feeding, Speech, and Mouth Development. I have a 15-hour course online if you really want to get in depth with this
Whoa.
information. That's also on the site. It's called Integrated Treatment of Feeding, Speech, and Mouth Function. I've been teaching that at the university level and also for continuing ed. And I have a new 6-hour course that's along the lines of what we're discussing, prevention of feeding, speech, and mouth development problems, birth to age 2.
Awesome. That's a lot of resources for anybody that has any interest to go just a little bit further on this topic. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining us today on this extended version of the OMT Sciences World Day. And I appreciate everything that you do. And I know that you kind of exert yourself around and make sure that everybody has a really good understanding of feeding and how the mouth works from infancy on.
Yes, thank you, Shirley, for doing this work. This is wonderful. I really appreciate the fact that you're getting all of our messages out there.
I'm happy to do it. This is very interesting for me, and I think it's a lot of fun, and I hope I make it fun for the listeners as well. So this is Shirley Kutkowski signing off for CrossLink Radio on this extended version of the World Day of OM Science, and we'll see you next time.